From WYPR, I'm Sheila Cast. We're on the record. It started as the kind of serious reporting the New York Times is known for. Journalist John Leland would spend a year talking to the very old and chronicle their problems and challenges. The more he interviewed them, the more he realized they didn't define themselves by what they had lost, but by what gave them joy. Fred Jones, an African American who grew up in the South, was grateful for each new day. Ping Wong, who immigrated from Hong Kong in her 50s, offered this advice.
When you get older, you have to make yourself happy. Otherwise, you get older. And so that was that idea that you really have to choose your happiness. You can't just wait for the circumstances around you to make you happy.
In his new book, Happiness is a Choice You Make, Leland says we might all be happier if we thought like old people. It's On the Record after the news.
You're listening to On the Record, the podcast, a service of your public radio, 88.1 WYPR. Find more podcasts online at wypr.org. And tell us what you think. Send an email to ontherecord@wypr.org.
Good morning, I'm Sheila Cast. We're On the Record. When New York Times reporter John Leland set out to spend a year with one of the fastest growing age groups in America, the oldest old, those 85 and up, he expected the stories that would emerge would be fairly morbid, if not downright depressing. A chronicle of losses, of deterioration of body, mind, and quality of life. He did not anticipate that he would end up with a book titled Happiness is a Choice You Make. Ruth Willig is one of the elders who spent time with Leland.
I turned 94 my last birthday on November 11th, and I'm proud that I'm still getting around.
And what keeps you going, Ruth?
What keeps me going? Well, I love my plants. I love watching them bloom and taking care of them. I like to read. I do the puzzles as much as I can, and I walk around on my own 2 feet. What else can I say?
You're a feisty lady.
I guess I'm a feisty lady, they tell me that.
How Leland got from his first thoughts to his conclusions, what he learned from the six old people he chose and his own mother, is what makes Happiness is a Choice You Make so riveting. John Leland is with me in studio to tell us about the journey. Welcome to the show.
Oh, thanks so much for having me.
What a great book.
Oh, thank you so much.
Take us back to 2015 when you set out to learn about old age by spending a lot of time with a few people older than 85. How did you search?
Well, first of all, I thought I knew all about old age, and I was just going to go out, and I knew what the problems were, and I was going to document them. I knew that falling was a problem and loss of some cognitive faculties, and so I set out to do a series about all the different ways that old age was bad. I looked for a cast of characters who would be different, and I found people that were gay and straight and black, white, and Asian, and were different economic groups and living in different circumstances, from a nursing home to living independently in a private apartment. Met them in senior centers, online, through friends. I cast, a couple dozen people, and I narrowed that down to six that would cover the range of experiences.
Tell me more about what you were looking for. How did you know when you had found the right six?
I wanted people I could talk to because I was going to spend a year with people. That was the deal. They had to agree to spend a year being interviewed by the New York Times and being photographed in their home. It could be an invasive thing. It could be a tiring thing. This is what you do as a newspaper reporter. You're always casting for characters. My other half is a former actor, and she always says, like, the main part of directing is casting. So I kind of knew when I had a good cast. They were all different from one another. There was not overlap between them.
And you were part of the story. You write that you had just gone through some losses yourself.
I was newly divorced at the time, and living alone for the first time in my life and trying to figure out where I fit in now. What did I want out of love and sex, and what was being a man now like, and how was I going to take care of my son? How did I fit into it? I mean, my son is actually living independently and he's older, but what sort of relationship was I going to have with him? And I had, my mother was 87 at the time, and I needed to figure out what relationship I'd have with her.
as you said, your first conversations with your cast of characters seem to confirm your preconviction that old age is all about loss, wasting muscles, memory deficits, limitations on getting around. And then you started to pick up something else.
They all had the hardships I set out to look for, but none of them defined themselves by them. Only other people did, and I was guilty of defining them by their problems. If you were homebound and struggling for money, that wasn't how you defined your life. Maybe you loved your plants, or you loved visits from your relatives. And each of them defined themselves in a different way, and it never had to do with whatever their setbacks they'd had as they aged.
You talk about them practicing gratitude.
There was a man named Fred Jones. He was one of the first of the six that I cast. And Fred was 87 at the time. He was living alone in a walk-up apartment.
African-American. Walk-up three flights.
Yeah.
What is it, 87 steps?
37 steps. And he was in the process of losing parts of two toes to an infection that was turning into gangrene. And I asked Fred, you know, what's your favorite part of the day? And he never hesitated. He just said, get a big smile on his face and say, waking up in the morning and saying, thank God for another day, on my way to 110. And I didn't get it. And it took me probably the better part of a year to understand what Fred meant by gratitude. And it wasn't that everything was easy for him, but he just found things in the world to give thanks for all the time. And it just, as soon as I understood that, when I finally understood it, I began to see gratitude the way he did and practice it the way he did, which is that we all have all these things around us to give thanks for all the time. And they're often a lot bigger than the things that we're getting upset about. And so, yeah, Fred was losing parts of a couple of toes, but he had a daughter and he had his life and he had all these things he cared about. And so that was how Fred saw his life, not the problem with his toes.
You write at one point that Fred saw the world as a benevolent place that wished him well, that wanted good for him. You wrote that it's not just gratitude for particular benefits that one sees in one's life, but something deeper, sort of an attitude toward all of life, to be grateful for the losses as well as the good things.
Yeah, Fred gave thanks for all the accumulation of good experiences he had in his life. He'd grown up, poor and black in the South, and his father had died before he was three. But he'd had the care of his mother and his grandmother growing up. He was the first in his family to go to college. He had a good job with a public service job. And then he had a good pension. So he had all these, and he had his longevity, living to 87. So he had all these things that he was thankful for all the time. When you have that much gratitude, you think, gosh, the world has given me all these things all the time. And sure, there are bad days, but even on bad days, all these things are still my life.
You write about research that consistently shows older people are happier than middle-aged people.
Especially happier than younger people. And we think, how can that possibly be? In your 20s, you're like, my abs were so tight, and I was all fit, and I was falling in love for the first time. And you forget how miserable some of your 20s were, and you didn't know, you're living with roommates, and you're in a fight with this roommate, and you don't know if you'll ever find love or find a career that fulfills you. And you're under so much pressure all the time, and is the world going to fall apart? And in old age, you kind of don't have some of those anxieties and stresses that you have when you're younger.
But literally, our older brains work differently. You write that there's research that shows that if you show a bunch of images to people of different ages, the older folks will not remember the negative images as much as the positive ones, whereas younger people remember them all. Selective memory.
Yeah, and there's an explanation for this that comes from a woman named Laura Carstensen, who runs the Longevity Center at Stanford. And what she says is that older people and younger people view the time horizon in front of them differently. And younger people have a lot of time in front of them, so they're gathering experiences and information because they don't know what they're going to need. And some of that's going to turn out to be unhappy. And older people see a shorter time frame in front of them, so they concentrate on things that are pleasing now. So when Older people look at those images, they remember the positive ones because those are pleasing to them now. And when younger people look at the images, they'll remember this, the positive and negative equally, because they don't know which they're going to need later on, which is going to be on the test.
This is On the Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cass, speaking with journalist John Leland about his new book, Happiness is a Choice You Make, Lessons from a Year Among the Oldest Old. As you kept talking to these elders, these six people whom you got to know so well, and some of them became more frail, more confused, or had some other setback, did there seem to be a point that would be too much loss when life would not be worth living?
Well, one of the six, a man named John Sorensen, had lost his partner, Walter, 6 years before I met him. And John said almost every time I saw him that he wanted to die. So it was too much for him. He was losing his vision and was losing the use of his hands. And he'd always told himself that when he got old, he would read and play piano. And he couldn't do either of those things. And he couldn't be with Walter. So it was too much for him. But John was such a fascinating character because he loved to talk. And so every time we talked, including when we talked about his wanting to die, he was in a really good mood. And I would say, you know, John, do you wish you had died yesterday? And John would say, no, because we have this conversation now. And I'd say, okay, well, you know, I'm going to leave in a little while. And do you want to die later tonight? And he would say, oh no, because Anne, my niece, is coming tomorrow. And, oh, yeah, Scott is coming the next day. And, oh, yeah, Alex is going to be here next week. So he could look ahead. He could see his life today and enjoy it. And he could see his life tomorrow and enjoy it. But he didn't want to be around. He didn't want to think about having to be around for another 4, 5, 6 years, 7 years, 10 years, and just continuing to deteriorate physically. But he kept himself going, and he did exercises every day. So, you know, what's the paradox there? He wants to die but does exercises. And John finally got to the point where he didn't want to do that anymore, and he just stopped eating. And he you know, it was a pretty quick trip from that point on. But at the end of his life, even in his last days, when he was in a tremendous lot of pain, and as I said, he was starving himself to death, he was listening to the arias that he loved more than anything. And he was really gave thanks to everyone who came to see him. And I saw him on one of his last days, and he'd just seen a physical therapist, and the physical therapist said, I'll be back again tomorrow. And John said, I look forward to it already. And that was so moving to me. And I thought, like, I don't live like that. Why don't I?
Why don't we all? Lots more I want to ask you about. We need to take a quick break here on the record. John Leland, author of Happiness is a Choice You Make, is staying with us. And when we're back, I want to ask him about some of the specific lessons he picked up from his panel of elders. I'm Sheila Cass. Stay with us.
This is the On the Record podcast, a service of Your Public Radio, member-supported 88.1 WYPR. You can support this podcast and everything you hear from WYPR. Become a member. Come to WYPR.org and click the donate link.
Welcome back to On the Record. I'm Sheila Cast. We're talking today with New York Times journalist John Leland about his new book, Happiness is a Choice You Make, Lessons from a Year Among the Oldest Old. He spent a year of frequent visits and deep conversations with six New Yorkers in their late 80s or early 90s, learned a lot, and wrote it into this book. Pick out for me a couple of the lessons that you found most amazing or surprising.
Well, gratitude from Fred Jones was such an important one. Ping Wang, a Chinese woman that was part of the story, she said, when you get older, you have to make yourself happy. Otherwise, you get older. And so that was that idea that you really have to choose your happiness. You can't just wait for the circumstances around you to make you happy, because the circumstances are going to go up and down. And in Ping's case, the circumstances were pretty hard. She lived on $700 a month. and she couldn't afford her pain medication for her sore joints, so she was tearing her lidocaine patches in half to make them last longer. But yet she found ways to choose to be happy, to find that happiness within herself rather than relying on, you know, getting that new car that new fur or living in a great apartment to be happy. So that was an important one. Jonas Mekas, who's a really pioneering avant-garde filmmaker in this country, taught me not to worry about things that hadn't actually happened. And Jonas said, I never worry, because why worry when it's not happening? And then when it happens, why worry? You deal with it. You waste time worrying, and it may not even happen what you think.
I had the impression as a reader that of all of these folks, Jonas was the one who touched you most. I want listeners to hear a bit of Jonas.
In my mind, I feel like I'm 27. And in my body, I feel maybe around 65. I don't feel like 95 at all. And I'm still going.
Jonas talked to you about a sense of purpose and a sense of wonder.
Jonas was the most philosophical of the people. And I don't think a week has gone by when I haven't quoted him either to myself or to other people, because his wisdom is so great. And Jonas said, you know, we are what we choose. We can choose to pay attention to ugly things, or we can choose beauty, and we can choose poetry and art. And one of them makes your life hard, and one of them enriches you and improves the life of the spirit. And that's been a big help to me. And a lot of the lessons, but particularly Jonas's, have been really helpful to me this year, when the news has been really difficult and combative and fractious to watch or to read in the newspaper. And Jonas has helped me put things, actually all the elders, I should say, helped me put these things in perspective and see what's really important in my life and what's the noise on cable television.
Some of your elders believed in an afterlife. I think most of them didn't. Did that seem to make a difference in their level of happiness?
That's a really good question. Fred Jones was the one who most believed in an afterlife, and he would always say to me, I think heaven is my home, but I'm not homesick. Fred always had a quip like that. It was one of the things that was so made visiting him so much fun. That, and he always had a dirty story. But he was the one who believed in an afterlife, and he was the only one who said he was afraid of death. All of them sort of dreaded the idea of dying, and they dreaded the idea of being in a lot of pain or becoming really dependent really dependent upon other people to take care of them. But Fred was the only one who feared death. And when I asked him about this, he said, why? And it was really touching. He just broke out in tears and said, because I don't know. I mean, he didn't know what there was after death, and that
troubled him.
That mystery just scared him.
You write a lot about the extent to which those of us who have not reached advanced age don't really understand it, that it's sort of a different world. Those folks have lived through our ages. We haven't yet lived through theirs. And it made me think, do you think that's part of why there is such a small percentage of people who have taken advantage of writing an advance directive, laid out what their wishes are for how they'd be cared for if they became incapacitated? Such low percentages of people do that. Is it because we have some instinct that we're going to feel differently about it when we actually reach old age?
I think that might be giving us too much credit. And I think that we go through life thinking we're never going to die and we won't have any need for a DNR.
Do not resuscitate.
Yes, a do not resuscitate order or an advance directive. It is true, I think, that we don't know how we'll feel when we'll get there. And it's one of the things that makes these advance directives quite complicated. A lot of times, younger people will think that their parents' quality of life is quite low. And when their parents are asked about it, they'll say it's much higher than, they'll rate it much higher than their children do.
Yeah, you cite research that even some people with dementia when they're able to answer questions about it, see a quality in their life that their caregivers don't see.
That was a fascinating thing to me. That was a very small British study, so it's not dispositive, but it opens some questions about that. And even in this study, even as their disease advanced and they became more impaired, they still rated their quality of life at about the same level that they had earlier on, whereas their kids thought, oh, mom's getting worse or dad's getting worse.
This is On the Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cass speaking with journalist John Leland about his new book, Happiness is a Choice You Make, Lessons from a Year Among the Oldest Old. You end up suggesting that everyone of any age would be happier if they thought like an old person.
Yeah, my book is not really about old age. It's about these lessons that they have to teach us now, however old we are. It just happens to be taught by people that are have lived a while and learned something about life. Maybe it takes 80 years to learn those things, to get that wise, but I don't think so. I think we can learn it now. And I have to say that from the time I started this project to the time I'm talking to you today, I'm really a different person. And I never expected it to be. I have a friend who says, John, you're the last person to write a book about happiness, because I was that crank. I was that person who was always mad about something or critical about things, and, you know, glass half full, glass half empty. I said, you call that a glass? You know, I was that guy. And just my time with the elders really taught me to just let that go and find joy in the things that are around me.
How do you do that?
I think it's a conscious effort to do it. And it's also, there was a time maybe about two-thirds of the way or halfway through my year with them, I just felt kind of foolish about being so negative about the small things that were giving me a hard time in my life when they were all like just models of resilience and dealing with things that were much bigger than I was dealing with. And they said, well, okay, these are the things, but that's not who I am.
So when you look ahead to being 85, what do you want your old age to be like?
I think about that now. I used to be afraid to think about that because I thought I wouldn't have a choice in what my old age is like. It's just going to be physical breakdown, mental breakdown. I'll be in some place that smells kind of funny. But now I look forward to it and I think I want intellectual stimulation. I love art. Art is very important to me now. I want to be surrounded by art. My time with friends is what brings me more joy than anything. So I want to be around people I care about. And those things, I think, they're the things that bring me the most joy now, and they're not inaccessible to an older person. So I hope my old age is filled with that.
How is your mother?
My mother is having the time of her life because now she's the star of this book. She said at the start of the book, I said, Mom, you know, what do you want to tell me? She goes, if you want to know what old age is like, it stinks. She had a quite negative view on aging and her life after my father died. And she's in a lot of pain. She's always had chronic back problems and they're only getting worse. But now she's getting to meet all these people who want to talk to her because she's in the book.
So you've transformed your own life and your mother's?
Well, I think being with her, I did transform my relationship with my mother. And that's been a good thing for both of us. I always thought about what I was doing for her. And I realized that when you do that, you're piling debts on somebody. If I'm always doing things for you and doing things for you, you're amassing obligations that you can't possibly fulfill.
So you don't look upon spending time with your mom as something, as a service you're providing?
No, because I would go and spend time with Fred Jones or Ruth Willig or Helen Moses, who lives in a nursing home in the Bronx, and I would think how much I was receiving from them, how much of value I was receiving from them. And then I would go see my mother and think what I can do for her. But after spending much time with these elders, I started to think about what I was receiving from my mother every time I saw her. And then it just made our time together so much more fulfilling and enjoyable.
So you're practicing gratitude.
I'm practicing gratitude, and loving it. I'm grateful for the opportunity to practice gratitude. I'm like Fred. Practicing gratitude makes me happy, and being happy gives me something to be grateful for, and it goes on and on and on and on and on.
Well, I'm grateful to you for this conversation. Thank you.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
Journalist and author John Leland. His new book is Happiness is a Choice You Make, Lessons from a Year Among the Oldest Old. I'm Sheila Cass. Glad you've been with us this morning on The Record. Come back tomorrow.
Thanks for listening to this segment of On the Record with Sheila Cast. You can catch the show on the radio Monday through Friday, 9:30 to 10 a.m. on 88.1 WYPR, your NPR news station. And you can support On the Record and all the other public radio programs that WYPR brings to you. Just click the donate link at the top of WYPR.org. And thanks.